been called and called and called and called again. We've talked about the first week how we're called on, each of us, to avoid our natural tendency to run from God and instead run and get caught in those arms of grace. The word is caught. Say it with me. Caught. The second week, we remembered how we were how the four guys were called up to bring the paralytic man and get him in front of Jesus. They did whatever it took, and there he experienced forgiveness. And we remember that by the word beam, which stands for by every available means. Say it with me, beam. Last week we talked about how we are called to our destiny. And the destiny of Christ was to seek and to save the lost. And our destiny is inextricably wrapped within that destiny. And so Jesus painted a picture and talked about himself as the physician and all of us patients in need of being healed. And our job was to be the wheelchair, to bring people to Jesus. The word is wheelchair. Say it with me. Wheelchair. This week we're talked about, our topic is again being called, but called into something. And it reminds me of a few years, 5 or 6 years ago, when I went on a trip with five middle school sons, and we went on a 5 or 6 day hike into Yosemite. We went up, I think, up one side of Half Dome and down the other. And about halfway through that trip, one day, I felt the call of nature. And so I thought I should find some privacy to fulfill this call. And so I traveled about 100 yards, and I looked and I saw there's a tree, and there's a rock, and there's a mountain. That's good markers. And so, but that wasn't quite far enough. So I went another couple hundred yards. Again, I saw some markers there, a tree, you know, a mountain, and a rock. That wasn't far enough. So I went way off somewhere. I knew where I was at, and after I completed my call and was ready to come back, I started heading back, and I went about 100 yards somewhere because I saw, you know, the tree and the rock and the mountain. And then I thought, you know, this might be the wrong direction. So I started going the other direction about 100 yards, and then I saw, well, there's a tree and a rock and a mountain there. And then I started looking around, and guess what I saw? Trees. Rocks, mountains. And I thought, oh no, I'm lost. What a strange phenomenon. So there I was. And as I stood there, I thought, well, I should just stand in one place and yell. So I stood in one place and I said, help, help, as loud as I could. Nothing happened. So I stuck with my strategy. I stayed there, and every 5 minutes or so, I would yell for help. And after 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes went by, no help. I started to think, you know, I could be called into this wilderness forever. And I started thinking of worst-case scenarios of when the helicopters would start coming and there would be a newspaper article about a pastor lost in hundreds of thousands of acres of Yosemite there. Fortunately, I heard a call at one point, Jay! And so they rescued me, and I was called out of the wilderness. But this whole thing about getting lost has bothered me. You know, and I'm thinking, why do I always get lost? And being, someone trained in psychology, I tried to figure it out. And I thought about, you know, even since I was like 6 years old, I was getting lost. As a matter of fact, my parents were tuned into that. They tried to keep track of me the best I could. But 6 years old, I actually got lost so much, six times when I was 6 years old, that my parents either had to call the police or were on the verge of calling the police. One time, I actually got lost under our dining room table. Ask my mom, it's true. She almost called the police, but then she spotted me. And so, you know, like any good psychologist, I'm thinking, there must be some root. I must be able to trace it back to something in my early childhood so I can blame my parents for it. And so then I thought about, when I was 10 months old, and I had my older brother and sister and my mom and dad there, at that point in time, life was good for me. And then the phone rang at one time. The phone rang, and so my dad answered it. He said, hello? Yeah, this is Master Sergeant Ashcraft. Yes? Oh, you want me to go to the other side of the world and protect the country? Okay, we'll do. And so my dad got a call from Uncle Sam that he should go to Japan. And so my brother, who was about 11, he could understand that kind of. My sister, who was 7, but 10 months old, I really couldn't understand that. You know, there's a thing called object permanence. You may have heard of that. That's where when you're like from 8 months to 18 months, you start to get this idea about things are permanent. If they disappear out of sight, they're not gone. But that's from 8 months to 18 months. I was 10 months right in prime time there, and my dad disappeared. And so I blame everything on that. I think that was the problem. My dad disappeared, so I wasn't able to really feel like anything was permanently there. And right about that time, that's when you get this thing where you internalize your parents so you can trust people. And so I'm thinking, wow, that's a good excuse for getting lost. That happened to me a lot. And that made me think back. And so if you would travel back with me, I'd like to go way back, way all the way back to the beginning. At the beginning, there was a creator, God, and he created two people. He created them in his image to be with him, to have a relationship with him. But they were really infants. They were new. They were grown up, but they were infants. And he created a nursery for them called the Garden of Eden. And they loved it there. Every evening he would walk with them and they would listen to him. And they were totally innocent and they were totally unashamed. And they were open to him. And they learned about their creator, and he knew them, and they had a great relationship. But just about the time they were going to gain that object permanence in their life, when they could really know that he was going to be there for them, and they were really going to internalize him as a part of the relationship of their life, just about that time, one day he was off in another part of the garden, and a stranger slips into the garden, and the stranger is talking to them, and the stranger says, "Hey, You know the one that created you? You really can't trust him." And I go, "Oh, are you kidding me? No, you can't trust him. He is keeping the best things from you. He told you not to eat of this tree. This will make you grown up. This will make you independent. You need to do that." And so unfortunately, they went ahead and they ate that fruit. And when they did that, a big, huge black wall of separation was created. A big, huge wall of guilt and a wall of sin. And they internalized that so that they had that terminal illness that they passed on to all of the generations to come. And all of us, even though we're created in God's image, like these first two, things were messed up on the inside. That image was marred and things weren't right. And instead of trusting their creator, they were afraid of him. They would run from him. They would go and find other things to fulfill their life instead of him. And so throughout history, he has